Well, it's a welcome return to Britain for you, Brian. When was the last time you played here?
Let me see, the last time we played here was 1983 when we did the Cuts Like a Knife tour. It was about October or November, if I remember correctly.
Glad to be back. I know a lot of North American. We'll make sure that people know that you're from Canada and not from the United States. But I know that people from North America are always fond of coming to Britain because of the tradition of music, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's nice for me, especially because I have a lot of family here, so I'm really into it.
Also, you have a top 40 hit in this country at the moment, which must delight you.
Yeah, it's really nice. I wasn't expecting it to do very much in England, so it's really surprising for me, as well as being very nice and gratifying.
Surprised, but I mean, it's a good song. Why do you think it's made it into the charts in Britain? Because in general, things tend to make it into the charts because a band or an artist like yourself have some sort of visual profile, i.e. a tour. And you're actually coming here after the fact, as it were, aren't you?
Yeah. I guess I wish I could put my finger on the trigger, but I don't really know. I guess it's just one of those things. The song seems to be ripe for the times, I guess.
Let's talk about your songwriting. Now, I know that you work with Jim Vallance. That's a songwriting relationship that goes back a number of years, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been together for about 7 years now. So we're still plugging away.
And Jim, I think he's much older than you in some ways. You're,
he's
what,
32.
25?
He's 32.
And you're 25, 26?
Right, 25, yeah.
Now, you wrote a song together about 1969, which was the end of the age of Aquarius, and it was all about the dreams and hopes people had. They thought that that was the way things would be. You must have been, what, 9, 10 years of old age then?
I was 10 years old then, yeah, going on 11.
How do you feel close to a song like that? How do you feel that you can relate to singing a song about, say, sitting on the porch with your friends and looking at the stars and the moon and being very cosmic about things?
Well, I mean, I look back on the time period as sort of being a growing experience for me, and maybe a little more relevant for Jim. But, you know, it's not so much the time period in that song as well as it is the idea of being nostalgic and looking back on old times and saying, you know, those were good times and those were the best days I had, you know. I think it's kind of a nice thing, and I think a lot of people do that, so I like the idea of that.
You say it's more nostalgic for Jim in a way. Do you regret not being the same age as Jim, in a sense, in the 60s? Because a lot of people look back on that and say that, you know, they wish they had been old enough to enjoy the fruits of all the experimenting that went on then.
Well, no, of course not, because I experimented later on. I think 69 was a good year, and it was one of the first years that I really got involved. I mean, that was the year the Beatles broke up. So I mean, it was a pretty big year for me, and I remember a lot of things about it. But I mean, I like the idea of looking back fondly on old times. I think it's good.
Before you made your name as a singer and a guitarist performer, you were really known as a songwriter yourself. I think you've penned songs that have been covered by the likes of Joe Cocker, for example. Mm. When did you make the transition from being a songwriter into saying, look, I've had enough of hearing my songs sung by other people, I'd like to do it myself?
Well,
he takes a drink.
I think, when I was starting out in 18, you know, it was nice to get a start in having someone do your songs, but it's also nice to have your own little niche. And I was always after record companies to give me a record deal, and it was tough. I mean, it was really, and it still is tough for anyone to get a record deal these days. But I persevered, and A&M was nice enough to give me a record deal, and you know, it's taken a long time to sort of formulate what I really wanted to do, and I'm still figuring it out, kind of, you know. But the thing is, I'm having a lot of fun doing it, and even though my first couple records weren't big hits and they weren't big successes, they were amazing times for me. I recorded my first album when I was 19, and through 19 and 20, and I had a wonderful experience of learning how to promote a record and get a band together, go on the road. And with the second record, it was sort of the same thing, except it just got a little bit more. I mean, I made a lot of friends, and so I could always go back to those people and say, hey, well, here's my new record. And they go, oh, well, that's different, or whatever. So, I mean, I've had a lot of fun doing this, you know.
When people start out, you get this impression in America, as I suppose in Britain a bit, that you got a guitar slung over your back and you get on a greyhound bus and make your way to one of the major music capitals of America, either Los Angeles or, if you're a country artist, to Nashville, Tennessee, or to New York. Now, you started out your days in Vancouver, which is on the west coast of America. Of course, it's across the border in Canada. Was that a music environment that you found very creative to start with?
Well, first of all, Vancouver is in Canada.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, it's a good place to it's a good place to start out, and I definitely had a good time getting worked up in there. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of musicians in that area that are looking for a gig, and there's a lot of clubs to play that are good to play when you're starting out, and it's a good environment if you're looking for a gig as a musician. So I recommend it highly, even today. You know, I mean, it's 10 years since I played the clubs there, but they're not. It's not. It's only 5 years since I played the clubs there. What am I saying? But it's still a good, really good place to play.
And the country's produced some excellent musicians. I guess there's been two phases of them in a way. Gordon Lightfoot, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen is a sort of 60s, 70s generation. More recent bands, Loverboy, Rush, have been very successful. Do you feel, looking on Canadian music, very patriotic about the country and the way it's produced its own homegrown talent?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of good talent in Canada, and it's sort of been coming and going for years, hasn't it? And a lot of people are still making those records today, like Neil Young and stuff. And I mean, there's been some good rock and roll bands like BTO and Guess Who. And so, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty proud of being Canadian.
Talking about the nationality side of it, you know, when a Brit meets an American or a Canadian, if they meet a Canadian, they automatically think they're from the States, because they perhaps don't know the different accents that there are. There certainly are different North American accents for Canadians.
Can you hear my Canadian accent?
Not really, but... But that brings about the other side of it, you know, that there are Canadian musicians and Canadian bands and the music scene there that's as important and in many ways successful in its own right.
Yeah.
I wonder how you feel about being lumped into being just sort of a North American hard rock guitarist and singer rather than someone that actually comes from Vancouver.
Well, I can't really explain that to you because you just do what you do, and I mean, people will put you where they want to put you, you know.
Okay.
And I mean, now that I have success in England, a lot of people really want to I mean, a lot of people claiming I was English, you know, but in fact I'm Canadian. And it's nice to go around the world, no matter where you go, no matter where you're from, and play music that make people happy, you know. And I think that's the most gratifying thing any musician or songwriter can possibly get.
Well, this tour of Britain and Europe brings you out with Tina Turner, who I know has become a close friend of yours. You've worked together on your album, and now you're the special guest for her tour. What's it like to work with a legend, a living legend like Tina Turner?
Well, it's one thing to work with one. It's another thing to sing with one every night. And that's what we've been doing. We've been singing with her, or I've been singing with her anyway. And it's pretty special. Every night I go up there, and I don't know what to expect. And I look forward to it every night because it's so exhilarating. I mean, I'm just a kid from North Van, you know, so it's a big thing for me.
It's funny because she was here a couple of weeks ago talking about recording a lot of Private Dancer, her album that's picked up a string of Grammys. And she said, you know, the reason why I did so much recording on the album is because I love Britain and I love the tradition of the musicians, and they've been very supportive. And you've said the same things yourself about this country, so it seems quite a nice comparison that the two of you are working together on a tour in Britain and are both having chart success at the same time.
Well, Tina's got the fire, and not many people have the fire. And I love her, you know. I think she's great, and what's nice about her is she really, really wants it a lot, and I think a lot of people want it for her. So, I mean, there's not much more you can say about it.
What about your songwriting now? What do you see in a song? How do you feel about the way you write melodies and get hooks in, those sort of commercial hooks that A&R people are always looking for when they want to release a single from an album?
Oh, man, I don't really think about it. It's just, songwriting's a funny thing. With Jim and I, our songwriting process is like you and I sitting here having a conversation, and every now and then you come across a good quote, or, you know, you say something intelligent, and it's those little moments that we look for when we're together, and we spend a lot of time working at it, and I think that that's the important thing. I don't expect songs to sort of come out of the blue. I mean, I really work at it to make it happen.
And the other thing that you work at is live concerts. I think last year you did something like over 200 gigs in the space of a year. That's almost...
Yeah, we did about 180 shows last year.
That's an amazing amount of concerts. It runs a bit thin at times, I imagine. It must be hard for you to keep going. I know that you enjoy playing live concerts, the exhilaration of working with a live audience, etc. But it must be a bit of a struggle at times to want to get up and go out and do it all over again.
Well, if you were me, you'd want to get up there every night. I mean, I really do. I really love it, and I don't think I've ever woken up one morning and said I don't want to do this, because you never know what to expect, and I try to make it a little bit different every night so that we're not doing the same thing all the time. You know, I want to make it interesting and I want to make it fun, and I mean, if it was boring, I wouldn't do it. I mean, it's like as soon as it starts to feel like work, I don't want to be there anymore.
Doing all that touring in America isn't necessarily a recipe for success. I know that bands have to tour a lot because it's such a big country and there's so many cities and such a large population to get to, but it doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with success to do so many gigs, so you've got to offer them something in return, haven't you?
Yeah, and plus, I mean, for us coming over here to England right now, I mean, it's kind of a risk because we've got a top 10 record in the States and Canada, and to sort of walk away from it and come over here and do a tour and try and get Europe happening in the middle of all that is a bit chancy for us, and we've been criticized for doing it from a lot of people, but I mean, we'll be there in the summertime and we'll probably come back here for the autumn, and I mean you gotta make a stab at it sometime, and there's no time like the present.
Kids Wanna Rock is another song from your latest album, which incidentally is in the top 10 in Britain at the moment, so congrats on that one.
Thanks.
Now it's a song that's a bit of an anthem about kids in America, maybe kids anywhere in the world that like rock and roll, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Around the world or around the block, everywhere I go, the kids want to rock.
Did you write that song because you were disappointed, dismayed with the songs that you were listening to on the radio? Because there are references to what you hear on there.
Well, I mean, just... Hey, I mean, after we did the 83 tour, I felt, you know, people were always saying, well, don't expect anything great here because people don't really know what to do in rock and roll here. They don't really know anything much about rock and roll, and I found that not to be true, because everywhere I'd go, I'd found people really did want to have a good time, and have, you know, if they came to see a rock and roll band, they'd want to rock out, and so the song was written sort of in reference to that, and also in reference to the fact that in the summertime, when we were writing the album, I kept turning on the radio and hearing all these bands that I didn't know and I couldn't distinguish, and so I thought, hey, this is getting frustrating, so I wanted to write sort of a rock and roll theme song for this record.
You've worked with Bob Clearmountain. He must be one of the most respected producers in America. He's put his name to a lot of different artists. Is that something you chose him because of his reputation, or have you known him for a long time?
Yeah, I've done three albums with Bob, so we worked together for a long time.
And he provides you the right ingredients, you think, the end result, i.e. a record that you feel good about?
Well, Bob's a pretty brilliant engineer, so I don't know what else I can say other than that. He's a good friend, and we have a good time making records.
Well, in addition to working with Jim, you've also tied up with David Foster recently. I think a couple of weeks ago you wrote a song called Tears Are Not Enough, which is Canada's response to the Ethiopian appeal. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. It's a song, you know, specifically for Ethiopia, and written with that in mind, and everybody that's involved in the project has donated their time. So, you know, for free, and we were quite amazed actually at the response that people had to doing this, because I didn't expect that we'd be able to get people like Neil Young and Anne Murray to come out and do it, and when they were the first ones to say yeah, then, you know, everything else sort of fell into place, and well, it was an eventful day to record the song with everybody in that room. And it turned out really well, and David's mixing it right now with Jim, and we'll see how it turns out. I think it's going to be real neat.
The music business and rock and roll can be amazingly affluent. I mean, the amounts of money that can be made by any single individual artist or group. And
well, I hope it makes $1 million so that it can save a lot of people's lives, you know, and I hope that is the reason we're doing it, and I hope it sells a gazillion records for everybody out there.
And that's what I was getting at too. I think the fact of the matter is that because you can have the ability to make so much money, whoever doubts the people that work in the business, they must have had the doubts disproved, if you like, by the success of Bob Geldof and Michu and Band-Aid,
yeah,
and your own project as well.
He's the guy that knows all about it, you know. Mm. I mean, Geldof has got to be commended for his time and effort, and if anybody knows what's going on with this whole project, then he would know. And so I'm not really the kind of spokesman you want to talk to about the money, monetarial end of it, but all I know is that this is a record is, you know, written for, it was written with Canadians, with Canadian singers for Canada, and it'll probably be played a lot of places, hopefully, and I hope it does really well, because I think it's a good song, and I think none of that, the cause is so good, and the intent and the vibe that everyone's had in donating their time and effort, and not just in the artist's sake and the writing's sake of it, but, you know, people like the managers, people like the record companies, people in the stores, and everyone has responded to this really well, and so let's hope it just does really well for everyone.
Well, we'll look forward to it coming out, and I'm sure it will be a success, which will in turn put food into the mouths of those that need it. Back
right.
to your own work at the moment. You're taking a brief break in London before you go back to Europe to continue touring with Tina?
Exactly, yeah. We have a the German end of the tour and France and Italy coming up, and then we're coming over to England to do Brighton and Bournemouth and London and up into Birmingham and Manchester and into Scotland and Edinburgh. It's going to be wonderful, and looking forward to it. And we're doing a couple of shows here at the Hammersmith as well after the tour's over. And then it's off to America to start the American tour.
And to break the record of over 180 shows in this year, 1985, eh?
who knows? I think we're getting up there already. We've been on the road 2 months, and there's only 2 months in the year, so.
Time for a break at some point. Well, you've got a couple of days now, but do you ever get a chance to actually take 2 or 3 weeks off and go fishing or something?
I'd like to, but you have to give me the time schedule. I'll have to give you the time. I think that I'll look forward to doing some time off when this tour's all over and kick back and maybe start working on the next record.